Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, it's the fourth and final Grand Slam tournament of 2021, and we seem to have been combining the various positions that we've been in at all the other pandemic Grand Slam tournaments for Recording Tennis Podcasts. We've got Catherine and Matt in position in Tennis Podcast Towers a la Wimbledon, and we've got me in the Salford hotel room a la everything else.
It's a pandemic podcast greatest hits medley.
Are we allowed to call it Tennis Podcast Towers if David's not here?
That's
that sort of tree falling in the forest thing, isn't it?
Billie Jean is as truly and utterly ecstatic as she was when she caught sight of Matt for the first time. She does now have a look about her of when's the tall one coming.
Yeah, well, I feel similarly. What can I say? I do miss it. Blimey, it's lovely there, isn't it? Look at that. Oh, I should be sitting right there on your left side, Catherine, eating Deliveroo.
Wait till the snack delivery comes. It may or may not come actually during this recording. So right. You might see a parade of snacks literally being delivered before your eyes.
I can't wait. I've had my chocolate bar. And I'm sat here with my cup of tea. And I'm ready to talk about tennis.
Those curtains are very evocative.
Aren't they?
They're the Pavlovian equivalent of, you know, the tennis podcast. Sort of, they make me want to make stupid predictions, just the sight of them. In
perfect.
A Pavlovian way.
Well, I've just done my quarterfinals. And, I think that I'm keeping up form here in this hotel room is all I can say. The US Open's about to start tomorrow, which means nightly editions of the tennis podcasts. It means morning newsletters being sent out, put together by Matt with a daily prediction, with his stat, with pictures of our lovely mascot, Francis. We've got loads of stuff coming your way, and Catherine's going to be presenting live telly on Prime Video from what time tomorrow is it, Catherine? 3:30, is it?
3:30 p.m. UK time.
Oh, it's going to be a cracking couple of days. We'll go through the order of play a little bit later, but I mean, it is. I don't know whether I just always say this because I'm excited about a new Grand Slam, but it really does feel like a heck of an order of play, particularly given who's not at the tournament. That's what's really struck me, is that there are so many players that should be in it, based on everything we've ever known about tennis at the top level in the past few years, but even without them, it looks really, really good. I'm going to be commentating on BBC Radio 5 Live Sports Extra here in the UK. We come on air tomorrow at around about 5 o'clock UK time, which is about an hour into play starting, and then we'll be... I think they're trying to sort of move me in gently, Catherine, because, you know, I run out of gas on the first day, tend to.
A 5 p.m. start?
Yeah. So maybe it's weather-related, like in Umeg, you know, with the heat.
Yeah, it was, I was in for rehearsal today at the Amazon Studios, and I was watching feeds coming down of various different practice sessions from various different courts, and occasionally the graphic pops up with the conditions, and it was 21 degrees. This was at about 1 p.m. local time, and 81% humidity.
Oh, my word.
Ooh.
Which is a very strange meteorological situation. Really muggy and sticky, but not actually that warm. But I imagine it's a relief compared to what it has been the past few days. I mean, the qualifying was played in some brutal conditions by the looks of things. So I'm sure you'd take bizarre over unbearable.
Yeah, there was no qualifying today. The qualifying was all concluded yesterday, was it? Yesterday, I think it was. There's some good results there that are going to make for interesting players that have been added to the draw from a British perspective. We've got three women in the main draw through the qualifying for the first time ever, I believe. And some good stories with Katie Bolter and Harriet Dart and young Emma Raducanu coming through in the most difficult, heavy, stifling-looking conditions. I mean, that's the thing about New York, isn't it? You can get what you've just described, 21 degrees and humidity, and you can get days where Catherine's holding an air conditioning unit. I mean,
Nelly, to give it her full name.
Correct.
Oh, she might. She might be with someone else this year.
but I mean, Katie Bolter's win in qualifying was looking so unlikely, wasn't it? Because of those conditions, I think she was really struggling in them. She was playing Kukshova. She won the first set, lost the second set. The heat rule was in effect. She went off at the end of the second set. And we were messaging, and we really thought she would struggle to even make it through that match. Went down a break at the start of the third set and just did so well to keep in touch. You know, while she was really struggling physically, she only kept it at one break down and then had a bit of a second win towards the end and really hit her way through. And yeah, that's a fantastic win from her. And that means five British women in the main draw, which is the first time at a slam other than Wimbledon since the 1992 Australian Open that there have been that many British women in the main draw. And it's the first time at the US Open since 1987. So, you know, British women's tennis is in a pretty good place at the moment in terms of lots of players in this draw.
And especially given how many of those are relatively at the start of their careers. I mean, obviously Raducanu being by far the youngest, and I lived that match through you two, who I think watched some, if not all, of it between you, and I think it's really massive for her that she won through that match. You know, she had to retire in an event on North American hard courts due to heat exhaustion just a couple of weeks ago to win through one of the biggest matches of her career. You know, the biggest match of her career, Maya Sharif in the final round of qualifying, you know, biggest match of her career outside of this year's Wimbledon run in those conditions, which were just horrifying by the sounds of things. It's a real marker of progress kind of before your eyes and you know, amazing to be 18 and for progress to happen that quickly, you know, within the space of two weeks. I'm not saying, you know, she'll never struggle with heat and humidity ever again, but that must just feel like such a personal triumph for her.
She's put it together well, hasn't she? Because the talent is clear, but she's gone out there and built herself some grit and stamina reserves in order to get through these types of conditions, because the sort of thing you were describing with Katie Bolter, she had that look when she was sitting down towards the end of the second set and they took the heat break, where players start to look a little bit delirious. There's a sort of weight on you with that heat. It's different heat, really, to certain other parts of the world. And I mean, you've experienced it, Catherine, in various different roles at that tournament, whether it's sort of, you know, difficulty breathing, you can't really fill your lungs, can you, sometimes? And there's just no real escape from it. So to come through, and also Raducanu, yeah, I mean, I just think if you can play like that with that sort of freedom, and she came out, she blitzed everybody. I mean, Maya Sharif is a good player who's playing the best stuff of her career, and Raducanu now faces Jennifer Brady in the first round of the US Open, which...
Would you like to repeat your tweet, which almost made a big prediction about that match, David, but just stop short to allow to cover yourself?
I'm happy to complete the prediction and state that Emma Raducanu will beat Jennifer Brady, who has not finished, I think, about three of her tournaments in recent months because of injury. I think if you put last year's Brady up against this year's Raducanu, Brady would win. But I don't think Brady is that player right now. I don't think she's that athlete.
And Jennifer Brady's loss will be David Law's predictions game.
Correct.
Yeah. I do feel like Jennifer Brady could be a tough player to face for the first time. I've no idea whether her head-to-heads with other players bear that out. But it feels like she hits a very different ball to a lot of the other players. And I think it's probably an adjustment, especially that forehand loaded with topspin. So I think if Raducanu can get to grips with that, and look, she seems to be pretty adaptable and getting to grips with most things at the moment, I think that could be a key for her. And just as your slightly vague tweet said, David, this is a good time to be playing Jennifer Brady. That was essentially the takeaway, wasn't it? Jennifer Brady, the start of the year, different story. But this one now, it's probably... if she can get through it, you then are in the position of a seed in the draw. So it could end up being a good draw if she can win it. And yeah, I think I'm with you, David. I think... What is it Andy Roddick says? He always takes the confident player. He really values confidence, and Raducanu's got that and Brady doesn't at the moment.
And it's on a show court, and she generally rises to that occasion, doesn't she? It's going to be played on Armstrong on Tuesday.
Yeah, awesome.
And I think that, I mean, obviously part of that is she's playing an American that reached a Grand Slam final this year, but I also think part of it is that Raducanu has had cut through internationally. She wasn't just a British story. Okay, it wasn't quite to the extent of Coco Gauff, but I think American tennis fans will know about Emma Raducanu, and she has contributed to that court billing.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know that Andy Roddick line came into my thinking whilst doing the predictions about half an hour ago for the quarterfinals? And the reason it came into my thinking, I don't think it's resulted in me actually picking anything of note. But it came into my thinking. But the reason I thought about it was because of the tournament results that we've just had. In Winston-Salem, for instance, where Ilya Ivashka has just won the tournament. And it's not just that he's won it. I mean, he beat Marin Cilic in three sets early on. And then he's gone and beaten...
Marin Cilic did not win today, folks.
No.
He
then beat Jan-Lennard Struff 6-2, 6-1. He beat Pablo Carreño Busta in two sets. He beat Emil Risavori 6-2, 6-1. And then he's beaten Mikhail Imer 6-love, 6-2. That's not normal behaviour, is it? Those are not normal tour results.
That's not normal for anyone. It's very not normal for Ilya Ivashka.
No. He's definitely having the year of his life, isn't he? I can't reel off the exact... evidence for that, but I know that I've said his name this year more than any other.
I remember he got a set off Nadal on clay. I think that might have been in Barcelona.
He took Federer close at Halle or Stuttgart on grass, didn't he?
And he beat Zverev somewhere. So yeah, he's had results for sure.
I've got him nowhere near my quarterfinals, I should add. to be honest, I don't even know who he plays. But anyway, the reason I mentioned the form over experience thing and confidence over experience thing was Svitolina beating Elise Cornet in the Chicago tournament today, and also Annette Contaveit beating Arina Kamelia-Begu in the Cleveland final, which incidentally we've had a lot of correspondence over in terms of where the land comes from. And apparently it's a long story, but anyway, more recently, LeBron James has been using it as part of his reference points for his return to the land with Cleveland Cavaliers. So there we are. But anyway, Contaveit and Svitolina briefly had positions in my quarterfinals until I changed my mind. So there we are. You're up to date.
Did you see the trophies that Svitolina and Cornet were given? I say trophies. I mean, more like fruit bowls. I mean, really, they need to up their trophy game. That's all I'm saying. We've had lovely tournament, I'm sure.
I quite often enjoy a slightly offbeat trophy. For example, the animals.
They were great. A lot of thought went into those.
Yeah. No, okay, right.
I'll look into them. Okay. No, I mean, I can't say I'm exactly some sort of knowledgeable point of reference where trophies are concerned. But anyway.
Just cast your aesthetic eye over it, David.
Okay. I haven't got one of those, but I'll borrow one. Novak Djokovic's road to the Grand Slam. Should we have a look at that as part of our draw preview here? Which is, I mean, that's the main story from a tennis perspective, isn't it, on the men's side?
Well, you say that, but we've managed to talk in depth about Ilya Ivashka before even mentioning Novak Djokovic.
But Ivashka doesn't appear to feature in Matt Roberts's road to the Grand Slam for Novak Djokovic. So round one is a qualifier, Holger Rune.
And he's in very good form. I mean, he's not only qualified, he's also won, I think, back-to-back challenger titles. I think I read he's on a 13-match winning streak.
He's a former junior number one, isn't he? And he's been at the O2 as a hitting partner. He's a Muratoglu. There's been a cloud over him of late, hasn't there? Because I think he admitted to saying a homophobic slur on court and apologised for it. So I think that needs mentioning. But he is young and hopefully he has learnt the error of his ways. But I think, I dare say, in light of recent chat, but I think he is a very confident young man.
Yes, I think that would be fair. I think it's very similar to Djokovic's Jack Draper draw in the first round of Wimbledon. You know, that sort of profile of player. He's on a 13-match winning streak, which is almost certainly going to end against Novak Djokovic, but it's probably his first real big stage moment to kind of show what he's made of a little bit.
The gist I'm getting, and I didn't go in Novak Djokovic's press conference.
That's the snacks, David.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. I get the gist that Novak Djokovic is feeling pretty fresh, which I think is probably what Catherine and Matt are going to feel after they've eaten the amount of snacks that they've just come through the door. not as fresh as Novak Djokovic sounded, certainly in his press conference after a month off following the Olympics. And I mean, my feeling was that he sounded really bullish, really positive, that he's going to take this on, embrace the challenge, not try and pretend it's not happening. And yeah, I mean, he's got to do them one at a time, but there doesn't seem to be any doubt in him, really, Matt. Is that what the gist you're getting?
Yeah, he wasn't playing it down, was he? I mean, no. It's kind of impossible to play it down, but he said the words, "This is probably my last chance to win the calendar Grand Slam. I'm fully aware of that. I hope I'm going to win lots more slams in the future, but to do this specific thing, it's not quite now or never, but it's now for sure." And it sort of feels like all of Novak Djokovic's career has been building to this point, in terms of he's now the guy. Nadal's not here, Federer's not here. He's going for something which no man has done since Rod Laver, and he's taking that on, and he's really aware of their absence as well, and he's aware that all eyes are going to be on him and the expectation is on him, and he's sort of looking to embrace that, I think, for sure.
Where does he feature, Catherine, do you feel, within your coverage? A British broadcaster covering this story, and obviously a lot of British players around, but how big a deal does this feel to you?
Yeah, in terms of the men's tournament, it is the Djokovic story and then the story of the rest of the tournament. In terms, once you bring the women's into it, that makes it a rather different kettle of fish, because you've got, okay, you haven't got the one standout story on the women's side like Novak Djokovic going for the calendar slam. That the now or never element to it just makes it an irresistible story. I think it just raises the stakes, doesn't it? But you do have arguably a more exciting tournament overall, because it is that much more open. So for some people, the Djokovic story will be a negative for them, because they like a competitive tournament. They like a total, maybe not total lottery, but they like the feeling of there being lots of different contenders. But some will also be really drawn in by this sort of Lord of the Rings style quest that Novak Djokovic is on. So, yeah, I think it depends whether you're talking about the whole US Open in general. I mean, I think there are, yeah, it's not eclipsing all else, put it that way. It's not Serena in
2015.
Yeah, it's on all the headlines, it's top of the headlines, but it's not that story against the field, as it were.
No. I think for me, I will go out of my way this tournament to watch Djokovic in the first week, in a way that I didn't really do at Wimbledon. Now, part of that is because, you know, this is the final leg of this pursuit, and you know, we've just done Serena Vinci. Anything can happen when he's going for this much history. You don't want to miss the match where he's struggling, or it's the one where he's got to battle through. I expect a lot of them will still be fairly routine Novak Djokovic wins, and I might switch off after a couple of sets and, you know, just keep an eye on it. But I feel it's necessary to watch his matches this week, this tournament, just in case something happens. And it's got me really hooked on this tournament in a way, for the men's side, missing so many big names as we are. I think it's cool that we have this storyline.
Yeah, it's really cool. Right, well, let's have a little look at the rest of his draw. He could play Struff in the second round. It could be Goffin or Nishikori or Mackenzie McDonald in round three. And then the bigger threats come thereafter. Maybe Aslan Karatsev in round four, or Taylor Fritz or Alex Dimonor. And then the bigger hitters, Hubert Hurkacz or Matteo Berrettini in the quarterfinals. Perhaps Alexander Zverev in the semis, and then Medvedev, Tsitsipas are the most likely finalists. I don't think it's too bad, really.
I think it's a good draw, basically, because Medvedev and Tsitsipas are on the other side of it. Karatsev's really faded this second half of the season. I don't see Dumanoor challenging him. I mean, just, yeah, the names that you realistically on paper could think could challenge him. And I know, you know, having studied Serena Vinci as we have, it's almost certainly his biggest test will come against somebody that is not mentioned in this podcast. But on paper, at least, his two biggest threats are in the other side of the draw. And that is a good thing.
Mm. Yeah. Right, well, let's have a look at the rest of the men's highlights in the first round. And really, I mean, the absolute lead is Andy Murray against Stefanos Tsitsipas. And when that came out of the draw, and
should we talk about the coming out of the draw?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't come out of the draw. It was revealed. It was one of those. It was worse than that because it was revealed... in the most comical manner, because we were advised that if we deigned to sufficiently retweet the US Open's teaser, we might get a US Open draw revealed to us. And that would have required 5,000 retweets, so US Open, at US Open told us, and they got about 1,300. And they still revealed the draw, so that was...
Yeah, because you can't just you can't be playing the tournament without the draw having been made public. I mean, just...
One of the more awkward and humiliating starts to a tournament that I can remember.
We've had some rough draws.
They went
ceremonies.
Full Rita Ora before the tournament even started.
But anyway, Andy Murray against Stefanos Tsitsipas came out. I mean, Murray has not had a great deal of luck, has he, with his draws in... recent times. And I mean, if he's not been injured, he's ended up facing really, really difficult people over the last couple of years, it seemed. And to face the third seed, a guy who he's never played before, which is interesting, and he does like playing these young players. And I think the main positive is that he seems upbeat about his own fitness just at the moment. I mean, he wasn't particularly optimistic about his form, relatively speaking. He feels like he should be playing better tennis than he is right now, but he wasn't complaining of any ill health in his press comments. And that was music to the ears, really, because it struck me, thinking back to that 2017 exhibition match he played against Roger Federer in Glasgow that I attended, and at that time Murray looked pretty much finished, and it was nigh unconfirmed to us that he was going to be finished over a year later in that Australian Open press conference. Here he is 4 years on, nearly, and Roger Federer, who looked fantastic that night and had just won Wimbledon, he's basically finished, and Andy Murray's still having a go, still looking all right. How is this happening? But, I don't know, Tsitsipas, second on Arthur Ashe Stadium court on day one. Catherine, do you feel an upset in the air? And by an upset, I mean a Murray win.
I don't, no. I think Tsitsipas is going to win that. But I think it could be closer than... you know, Murray against Auger Eliassime at last year's US Open, or Murray against Wawrinka at the French Open a couple of years. You know, some of the sort of awkward Murray coming up against really good player in good form encounters that we've seen in the last few years. I don't anticipate it being awkward. I could even anticipate it being more than three sets, and it being, you know, like in a run chase in cricket. There's always a moment where it feels like it might be possible, even when it's not. I feel like that could happen with this.
Yeah, and I think those matches you mentioned, and I'd also throw in the Shapovalov one at Wimbledon this year, which was sort of the last time we saw Murray really take on a top player in a big match. They were all affected by the matches that had come before for Murray, and he was physically pretty spent. So perhaps there is a case you can make that actually the first round might be the best possible look he's got physically at getting to Tsitsipas. Tsitsipas has never perform that well at the US Open. I think he's never been beyond the third round. He's still yet to prove that he likes these conditions. I'm still taking Tsitsipas for the win, but I think you can build that up as another moment. You know, Murray's talked about wanting more moments, wanting to match his game up. I think there is a way to look at this draw as an okay draw for Murray. Obviously, it's a tough one, but the conditions might be there that he can challenge, and we haven't really seen him challenge a top player at a slam.
I also think it could be really good fun, because I think Andy Murray is going to deploy everything he can, which means getting under the occasionally very teenage skin of Stefanos Tsitsipas. I really think he's going to try and bring out the immaturity in him and really get to him, which has cost him matches recently. It has. Murray's going to press that button, and it's going to be really good fun, I think.
I think there's something in that. He is looking forward to it. That much is clear. He's looking forward to the challenge, seeing where he is. It's a good way to find out. It's the scene, of course, of his first ever Grand Slam singles title 9 years ago, which...
Imagine that Andy Murray up against Tsitsipas. Yeah. You know, that would be just a brilliant match. Such creative players. You know, I think we're going to end up having missed a lot of Andy Murray versus XYZ players, and Tsitsipas is one of them. You know, Murray should, if his body was still, you know, healthy, he would have had a little rivalry with Tsitsipas over these last few years. Medvedev, you know, we've missed out on that, and we get a little taste of it tomorrow.
Well, look forward to it. A few other highlights from the first round. Taylor Fritz against Alex de Minaur. Fabio Fognini against Vasek Pospisil. Shardy Berrettini. These are just good, solid matches, which could sort of go either way, it seems to me. Like Khachanov against Lloyd Harris. These are people that have just had good runs. They're established players. I don't think I'll necessarily be stopping what I'm doing to watch all of them from first ball to last. You know, probably
what you'll be doing, David, is being paid to watch a lot of them from first ball to last. So you're in luck.
So thanks, Tennis Podcast listeners, for encouraging that. Roberto Bautista good against Nick Kyrgios, though, will be what we've got on probably tomorrow night when we're recording this show. Which I mean, Kyrgios is having a rough time, isn't he? He's not playing well at all. He's not winning matches. He seems a bit rudderless right now, even more than normal. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, appealing for hitting partners on Twitter, sort of 5 days out from a slam, not even specifying any credentials or qualifications required for the role, just literally anyone that's available.
Or time. Yeah. Or location.
Yeah. It's not necessarily an indicator of being in a great place, but there's never any logic really to when he pulls something out of the bag, is there? So who's to say he won't this time? But I fear against somebody as professional as Roberto Bautista, it could just be a really flat. He's also very hard to paint as the villain, Roberto, but he's sort of been forced into the villain role a few times, hasn't he? Obviously, most notably at the Australian Open against Andy Murray, and he just won't do it.
They're trying
just
the best,
too
aren't
damn
they?
Nice.
They're sticking it on as a night match. They're trying to make, and they're not putting it on Ash. They're putting it on the more sort of intimate arena. They're doing the best.
Stop trying to make Kyrgios happen.
By the way, a couple of other good ones here. Cameron Norrie against Carlos Alcaraz. I think they'll have to be scraping those two off the court at the end of that match. And I really like the idea of Casper Ruud against Joe Wilfried Tsonga. Feels like two eras of tennis player just clashing.
Also Ivo Karlovic against Andrei Rublev.
Oh.
Ivo Karlovic, who's qualified, and I think Nadal would say he's 42 and a half. And I think he's the oldest man to play a Grand Slam since Ken Rosewall. And he's drawn Rublev in the first round. And Rublev has lost twice to Isner this year, hasn't he?
Yeah. In fact, he's never beaten Isner.
Yeah.
I think he's got a 3-0 head-to-head.
So he struggles against Isner, so let's see how he copes with Karlovic's serve. I could imagine him.
Can you imagine his reaction when he saw that draw? Oh.
Fuming. Just a permanent state of fuming. Okay. And finally, in Matt's little rundown, we've got Richard Gasquet, who seems to be in decent form at the moment, up against Daniil Medvedev. So, yeah, Medvedev's progress will be fascinating again throughout the course of the tournament, based on his latest meltdown, won't it? To see whether he can just sort of hold it together. The women's draw is just so much more interesting, just so much more stacked with names and players that I do want to stop and watch, is my immediate reaction. And when we were doing the predictions before coming on air tonight, I was really struggling. I changed my mind quite a few times about who was going through into these quarterfinals. And I mean, even when you look at the first round, you've got Karolina Muchova against Sara Cerebes-Tormo. You've got Sevastova Siniakova, Ostapenko Podoroska, Camilla Giorgi against Simona Halep.
Mm, she can't catch a break in New York, Halep, can she?
No.
No.
And that's the sort of player she's lost to in New York before. She's lost to Kanepi, hasn't she, in the past? Mm-hmm. And Sharapova, the big hitters. So,
yeah, it's just a really horrible draw.
Mm. And we don't really know
how
she is physically either. I don't think there's a lot of confidence in Simona Halep physically in this tournament. She's had some real struggles having this comeback from that injury that she sustained in Rome.
Dare I say this massive aggro alert on Angelique Kerber against Diana Yastremska?
Just because of Diana Yastremska?
Well, and because Kerber just won't have it, you know?
Yeah, we need Kerber from the
Don't think Kerber gets drawn in, though. She passive-aggressively put something on Twitter several hours later. That's that's her aggro.
I think she's quite good at the old eye roll as well.
Well, I respect that. I respect that a lot.
If it comes to
But I don't know. I think of her as an aggro dampener rather than an aggro creator.
She's not going to go and rise above or something like that, is she?
I think she might try.
Oh, okay. All right. Matt put as an afterthought Maria Sakkari against Marta Kostyuk, which is actually quite a good match. I think ran out of space.
You haven't talked about Marta Kostyuk in a while, Matt.
We're talking about her now.
She got into the conversation in the second tweet of the thread. Madison Keys against Sloane Stephens starts the US Open. I mean, it ended the US Open about 4 years ago.
Yeah, that is an amazing first round match. It does make me a little bit
sad. Is it
sad?
Yeah. My first reaction to that draw was, oh, that's brilliant. And then
it slowly dawned on me that
I got this feeling
sad
in the pit of my stomach. Yeah.
They shouldn't be meeting in the first round. You know, I think they have the... Look, there's a lot of players with the game and the potential to be, you know, meeting regularly in the second week, and they can't all be. That's just the depth of women's tennis at the moment. But those two are too good for one of them to be going out of the first round of the US Open.
And it's not like, you know, they've just had a momentary dip because of injury or illness, and they're both sort of on the upward trajectory back to where they belong. They seem to have just sort of levelled out at this ranking outside of the seeded positions. That's what's sad, I think. That you don't sort of... Yeah, your reaction isn't, oh, but neither of them are where they belong, because they... I suppose the rankings don't lie, and... Ugh. I mean, I hope it'll be, well, more enjoyable than the 2017 final anyway, because it was a bit of a dud.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be quite interesting, the atmosphere, because that'll be first up, so it's a midday match, isn't it? And, I wonder who America will get behind in the stadium for that match. And I hope it's good, because you're right, I do think that is a bit sad to think of this rivalry that was a Grand Slam final taking place in the first round, but you know, it'll probably be good tennis. That much is for sure. A couple of things that came out of the press conferences over the weekend or over the last couple of days. Andy Murray was in yesterday. And aside from talking about how he was feeling, he was also asked by Mike Dixon of the Daily Mail about his view on the news that I think less than 50% of the tour players are believed to have been vaccinated. And he was asked whether Murray thinks that is sustainable, particularly given on the same day the US Open announced that every ticket holder attending the tournament needed to be vaccinated, and there isn't the same requirement from the actual players. And Murray, as is pretty typical, was quite happy to talk about that and to give a very full and measured answer. Yeah, he said, over the next few months, things are probably going to end up changing quite a bit. I know the conversations with regards to the Australian Open are already happening. The players that have been vaccinated are going to potentially be able to have very different conditions to those who are not. He talks about himself and how he's able to lead a pretty normal existence, for instance, in New York, and he's got a lot more freedom than those that are not vaccinated. And he says, ultimately, I guess the reason why all of us are getting vaccinated is to look out for the wider public. We have a responsibility as players that are travelling across the world to look out for everyone else as well. I'm happy that I'm vaccinated. I'm hoping that more players choose to in the coming months. It's a message that's not really getting across to that many. It's a valid point, isn't it? Because those are the tournaments. It's going to become more and more of a requirement, you would think, as time goes on.
I certainly hope so. I mean, I find it galling that at this tournament, fans are required to be double vaccinated in order to attend. My understanding is that staff, those that are accredited to be on site, have to show proof of double vaccination in order to be physically present on site. The only people who don't have to be double vaccinated to be there are the players, and they are the ones for whom special dispensation is being made for them to be there. Special allowances are being made for these elite athletes to travel across the world. They incur greater risk of spreading the virus to a wider number of people numerically and geographically and everything associated with that in terms of variants, etc. It is more vital, in my view, that they are vaccinated than anybody else. And it would be utterly galling to me if I were a staff member that for health reasons was unable to be vaccinated, let's say. I don't know if those people are exempt from the vaccination rule, but being put at risk by, frankly, selfish and hubristic tennis players who are, I know that those that haven't had the vaccine, it falls into lots of different categories. There are some that are categorically anti-vax on principle, and there are some that feel like Tsitsipas does, seemingly, sort of, well, I'm all right, Jack. I'm young and healthy and a fit athlete, so why should I bother? Which, as I said when we were talking about those quotes from Tsitsipas at the time, is at this stage of the pandemic an unforgivably ignorant and selfish point of view. And yeah, Andy Murray summed that up brilliantly. He got the vaccine to protect other people. And that's all there is to it, really. So I certainly hope so. I hope the tours will be putting a rule in place. And I know some people think that it's not the jurisdiction of the tours. Well, the tours are asking countries and governments, local authorities, to make exceptions for their athletes to be able to travel. You know, it is not currently... Matt and I couldn't travel to New York to go to a Bruce Springsteen concert despite being double vaccinated, for example. And that is obviously heartbreaking, and we'll cry ourselves to sleep tonight. But I get it. But special exemptions are made for elite athletes to be able to travel to New York. And it's a completely unsatisfactory situation at the moment, in my view.
And the other talking point and subject that came up in press conferences that that we need to talk about is, or at least update you on, is a second article that came out this week written by Ben Rothenberg on the Slate website. And it's detailed the second series of allegations of domestic abuse by Alexander Zverev by his former girlfriend, Olya Sharipova. In it, Sharipova said that the abuse that had been detailed in Racquet magazine late last year, in which she described events that she said had taken place during the US Open and Laver Cup in 2019, that those incidents were followed in Shanghai in late 2019 by what she alleged were another series of incidents, and she described them in harrowing detail. Zverev then released a statement the following day on his social media accounts that read as follows. I've engaged my German and American lawyers in the matter. They have already obtained a preliminary injunction against the source and the author who published the false allegations. The court followed our arguments and states, the accusations aroused are defamatory and false. The lawyers have therefore initiated further proceedings against the source and the author. I categorically and unequivocally deny having abused Olya. I also fully support the creation of an ATP domestic violence policy. I will not address this matter any further. However, the following day, it did come up in the press conference that he attended. He was one of the first players into the press conference the next day. And he was asked in that press conference about this situation, about this article, and he said he was asked whether he knew it was coming out and how he felt about it. And he answered, no, I've always said that the allegations and everything that has been said is untrue. The court confirmed that. So there's nothing else to say from my side, because as I said, the court confirmed that it's untrue. There's nothing more I can say towards that. Now, Tománi Carriol then asked him to clarify what he meant. He said, you just said earlier that the court confirmed the allegations against you were wrong. I want to clarify exactly what you say the court confirmed. As far as I'm aware, you haven't had any trial or anything like that. Also, in your statement, you said you'd be happy for the ATP to have a domestic violence policy. Would you be willing for them to investigate themselves and speak to you about it? Zverev replied, well, what do you mean? We didn't go to trial. If the court confirmed it, they confirmed it. There's nothing else I can say. Also, I've actually asked the ATP the past 6 months to have something. It's going to get sorted in these kinds of situations. I think it's good that the ATP is kind of renewing their rules a little bit, because they've been there since the 80s and nothing has been changed. But regarding my topic, I think my statement has been very clear. There's nothing else I can say, or there's nothing else to say, because I've said everything. It's very confusing what he's saying there about a court, because as far as I'm aware,
it's not confusing, it's untrue.
And the court hasn't said anything really about anything.
There's been no trial, no investigation, and he's claiming to have been exonerated in a court. I genuinely don't understand what he's talking about there.
It has been referred to as you know, whatever you think about the allegations and the public nature of them, etc. What he said yesterday, it isn't true, and he reiterated it several times in that statement. And it didn't go unchallenged, as you said. David Tománi did challenge it, but it's worrying, isn't it? That's kind of the culture that we live in now. That truth is open to interpretation, worryingly. So it's
And whether he just misunderstands, I have no idea, but anyway, that's what he said. A couple of other things. There's a really good piece written by Simon Briggs on Naomi Osaka today, which I just found it really fascinating to read more from Naomi Osaka on her Twitter feed today. She put out another statement. She just seems to be trying to get a grip on and a grasp of how she feels and who she is and where she stands in the world and how she wants to come at life. And I'm really glad she's giving it that degree of thought. And I really feel for her anyway. I mean, she's such good news for the sport, but she's also seems like just a really decent human being who's trying her best to figure it all out. And Simon's piece, I think, does a very good job of making clear that the situation we were in earlier this year, where she made her stand and it all blew up and everybody felt that they were pushed into making a stance or taking a side or giving an absolute definitive view on where they stood on it all, it isn't like that. And I think we started to feel that as time went on. And I'm really pleased that she's continuing to try to investigate her own views and state of mind and analyze it all. I don't know what this will mean for her tennis, because I often think tennis players need to be so focused and tunnel visioned. And maybe she's going to be a player that has these waves of momentum depending on where she is. But God, she's interesting to listen to. And I think for a lot of people that follow her, that she'll probably do them an awful lot of good, really, her whole story, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think Simon's piece quoted Osaka as saying that she's not someone who can go onto court and just forget about everything that's going on in her life. And in fact, she's someone who specifically at this tournament last year tied her tennis to her bigger goal and bigger purpose in life, which was wearing the masks and raising the awareness of police violence towards black people in the United States. And therefore, given what she's told us about how she's feeling, and it's quite difficult, I think, to predict how she's going to get on at this tournament. I think Andreescu called her the face of hardcore tennis, which I thought was quite a nice expression in terms of what Osaka has managed to achieve. And it's possible she will hit those heights because she's that good. I also think it's possible she might struggle. I really do not know what to expect from Naomi Osaka over these next 2 weeks. And I think she doesn't either. I think she's really taking it match by match at the moment. And hopefully that will be a slightly, you know, sustainable approach for her as well.
Where has Pam Shriver put her in her predictions?
Yeah, although we have copied Pam in the past and it's gone.
No, yes.
It's gone wrong.
I don't have her in my quarterfinals. But it's a packed draw. It's rammed.
Yeah, she's in that section where there's a lot of inform or dangerous players, I think, aren't there, in those first few rounds for her. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch Osaka this tournament, and I hope we see lots of her, but I kind of wouldn't be surprised by whatever she does. I know that's like the vaguest thing to say, but that feels like where we are with Osaka.
Quite right. Right, well, let's have a quick look at the order of play, shall we, for tomorrow, because it really is a belter. I'm just so pumped. It starts at 12 o'clock local time in Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Really, Madison. Pleased the listeners get to experience that without the visual.
Because without the gritted teeth.
It was...
Madison Keys against Sloane Stephens starts things off. Then it's Andy Murray against Stefanos Tsitsipas. In the night session, it's Naomi Osaka against Maria Buzkova, followed by Richard Gasquet against Daniil Medvedev. Louis Armstrong has got Donna Vekic against Garbiñe Muguruza. Yes, please. 11 o'clock local time, 4 o'clock in the UK. And then John Isner against Brandon Nakashima. Coco Gauff, who I've got going all the way, folks.
Hang on, what does all the way mean? Winning the title?
Final.
Okay, we need to have a discussion about all the way.
All right.
Yeah,
okay,
all the later. Way means to the trophy, in okay. my view. Yeah.
Okay, but wow, final. Okay, that is bold.
Yeah. And, who's she losing to?
Barty. Louis Armstrong has got Sabalenka Stojanovic in the first evening session match, followed by Kyrgios against Bautista Agut. There's loads and loads of good matches on. Just stay across all this stuff. And if you're in the UK, you will be caring about court number 10, which starts with Dan Evans at the start of the day against Tiago Monteiro, then Heather Watson against Kaya Juvan, Joe Konta against Kristina Mladenovic. So four Brits in a row, because it finishes with Cameron Norrie against Carlos Alcaraz. Who's going to win that, Norrie or Alcaraz?
Oh, crikey. Norrie?
Do you know, 3 weeks ago I would have said Norrie without hesitation,
yeah.
But he has struggled a little bit recently, and I think Alcaraz played well last week. I think possibly Alcaraz.
Okay.
Yeah, what he said. Yeah.
Okay, all right then. Well, our US Open mascot is Francis the Cat, and Drew and David own Francis the Cat, which is a marvellous cat, and we want a picture. Drew and David, so send us a photo and we'll stick it in the newsletter.
We would also like to know if Francis is named after anyone, please.
Oh yes, please. And we're going to put a picture in the newsletter, which will be going out every single morning of the US Open, put together by Matt and sent out in the mornings with our prediction for the day. We'll be up against Daryl. Who else we're going to be taking on in the predictions over the course of the next couple of weeks, Matt?
We've got Guillermo.
Oh, go on,
Guillermo del Angel, who is going to be at the US Open. He's based in Boston and he's going
Brilliant.
Over to New York. And we have the famous Chris Albert Lee.
Come on, Chris. Let's have it. I'm ready for you. And
he did another face there, Chris.
Yeah. And we've got Scousel Mousel, Rogue, Zeus and Billie Jean King as the people that are sponsoring us all. So do tell your friends about the Tennis Podcast, which is going to be coming your way every single night of the US Open. And leave us an iTunes review. Catherine will be on the telly from 3:30 UK time on Amazon Prime Video. I'm going to be on the radio from 5. Matt's going to be watching everything, literally everything.
Aren't you, yeah, Matt? we're in eyes bugging out territory over the next few days.
Billie Jean is going to help him multi-screen.
Billie Jean is going to keep me company. And I need to do a little teaser on this podcast to say that shout-outs are returning from tomorrow.
Oh, excellent.
We've had a shout-out-less couple of months, but they're back.
Can't wait.
Doing my best David Law. Hype.
Hype man, Matt Roberts. Brilliant. Okay, right, well, go get some sleep, Catherine. Matt, go and get this podcast edited and let's put this newsletter together and get it out to everybody. People can't wait.
He's giving us orders.
I'm going to submit my newsletter, my predictions. I'll tell you, they're all going down, all of you. I'm going to be on fire with these predictions. This is the one.
What's going to happen, David, is you're going to burn out in about 14 hours if you keep this up. It's a very long 2 weeks. Chill.
David just told me that he's brought extra painkillers with him.
Chill
in anticipation of
out.
A burnout headache, yeah. On day one.
I'm definitely going to get headache on day one, halfway through commentary duties, because that always happens. But once I've had my headache tablets, I'm back. Right. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow. Get watching the tennis, folks, and get listening to us every single night. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford Tough, Built Ford Proud.